Let's head out to the McLaren Health Plan phone line and talk with Stephen Vladek. He's a professor of law and associate dean for scholarship at the American University's College, Washington College of Law. Not only does Stephen know the law, and not only does he follow and study the Supreme Court, but he can break it down so people like me can understand it. Stephen, how are you?
I'm good, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I wanted to just get your take on a few things. First of all, I know you've been following with interest the story of Obamacare in the Supreme Court after the oral presentations. Just wanted to get your take on what you thought.
Well, you know, I think it was, as we expected, I think it was a really fascinating 3 days. Certainly the more conservative justices seemed very, very hostile to the government's position. You know, Tony, I think any question that people had about whether Justice Scalia might be actually surprisingly sympathetic to the government's view, I think we answered that last week. The answer is no. So I think the case is really going to come down to Justice Kennedy and maybe even Chief Justice Roberts and whether they really believe that the president, that Congress has actually gone too far.
So it sounds like you think that that this definitely is in doubt and could go against the president.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Tony, it's always hard to draw any conclusions from the oral argument, but certainly the conservative justices, Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Kennedy, Justice Scalia, you know, Justice Alito, expressed a lot more hostility toward the government's position last week, especially on the merits, you know, especially as to whether Congress has the power to enact the individual mandate than they did to the challenger's position. So, you know, I think any sort of thought, any view that the court actually might be not divided along typical partisan ideological lines, you know, I think those were really dispelled by last week's oral argument. I think the question is really just how are the justices in the middle, you know, going to view the issue.
Stephen, did either attorney or group of attorneys, I should say, fail to complete their mission to get their point across?
Well, you know, so there's been a lot of coverage about the government's lawyer, the Solicitor General Don Borelli, who at least some media outlets have portrayed as having a pretty bad couple days. You know, I think that was bound to happen. The government's position here is, I think, the trickier one. You know, he's not just defending this statute, he has to defend the power of Congress in the future. I suspect that Borelli, the Solicitor General, if he had it to do over again, there are some points he would have made differently. He would have tried harder to convince, you know, Justice Kennedy and perhaps Chief Justice Roberts of where the limiting principle is, where the stopping point is to Congress's power. If they can do this, what can't they do? But, you know, I think for the most part, it was pretty high quality advocacy over the course of 3 days on a series of very tough and, I think, very interesting questions.
Stephen, when do you think the earliest time is we could hear their verdict on this?
Well, you know, I mean, Tony, in theory it could be any time, but given that the court is probably divided, given that there are four different issues that the justices are going to have to resolve to decide this case, you know, I think the earliest and the latest dates are actually probably about identical, which is the end of June. You know, the Supreme Court has a tradition, although it's not required anywhere, that it finishes all of its business before it rises and leaves for the summer. And I think lately that's meant we've seen the last opinions, especially the most controversial opinions, out by the end of June. I suspect that pattern will hold here.
All right, how does the process work, Stephen, now that the oral arguments have been presented? Will the each justice sit down with its staff and discuss what they heard, or will it just be the justices in a room hammering out what they thought and what they heard?
No, it's both. I mean, I think, you know, the biggest moment will come last Friday. So the cases were argued Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. You know, the individual justices, without any of their staffers, will have met for what's called conference last Friday in a conference room with nobody else around, probably for a couple of hours, where going in order of seniority, starting with the Chief Justice and going down the line, they each will have expressed their views about how they think the case should come out. And based on those views, the Chief Justice will assign opinions at that point. You know, someone to write a majority opinion, someone to write a dissent. And, you know, this week I suspect the justices are back in their chambers with their clerks starting to put the finer points on those opinions.
Stephen, the Supreme Court upholds the jail strip searches. What do you think about this story? Is a close ruling?
Yeah, so this, you know, this case came out on Monday. You know, the court ruled 5-4, with Justice Kennedy siding with the more conservative justices, that law enforcement officers may constitutionally strip search any prisoner, anyone who's arrested, even for minor nonviolent offenses. As long as the offense is arrestable, law enforcement authorities are allowed to do a strip search. I think that's an interesting and controversial position, especially given that a lot of times we're talking about people who are pulled over for traffic offenses, for unpaid tickets. Justice Kennedy, writing for the majority, says it doesn't matter why you're arrested. Once you're in prison, the prison's interest in safety and preventing contraband and weapons from being smuggled in trumps any interest in privacy you may have had. You know, that's an interesting conclusion, Tony, given that in Florence's case himself, he was actually arrested under false, well, not under false pretenses, but he was arrested improperly. They actually had the wrong information on him. So I think it's a pretty broad and pretty, I think, at least in my mind, problematic holding.
Stephen, what other cases are you keeping an eye on?
Well, you know, there's a couple of big things coming down the pipe. Last week, the folks who had lost in Montana on the sequel to Citizens United, the question of whether the Constitution protects unlimited expenditures to political campaigns, they filed a petition for certiorari. I think the Supreme Court is likely to grant that case. There's one more big merits case that has not yet been argued this term, the Arizona immigration case. So, you know, I think we still got a lot more headlines coming out of the Supreme Court this term, no matter what happens with the health care cases.
Well, Stephen, it must be fascinating times for you as a professor to be teaching young kids when you've got all these great cases to work with.
You know, it is fascinating. I think it's easy for students to be interested and excited about constitutional law. You know, I think this is, Tony, I suspect we're going to look back in 5 or 10 years and see this as a pretty important turning point, you know, in the Supreme Court's approach to the Constitution one way or the other. You know, it remains to be seen just sort of which direction it's going to go.
All right. Stephen, one more topic I'd like to talk to you about. It seems like we talk about laws and ordinances and stories here in Michigan that revolve around the fact that the rights of the few perhaps hinder the many. And by that, I mean there's been some instances with nativity scenes. There's been some words that shouldn't be used. That's been challenged in court, and I just wanted to get your take from a Constitution perspective. How does the Constitution see the hindrances of the many to take care of the few?
Yeah, you know, Tony, I actually think this is one of the central great questions of constitutional law. You know, for the most part, this is a democracy, right? And so the majority is going to win 99% of the time. The reason why we have courts, the reason why we have a written constitution, you know, is specifically for the instances when democracy shouldn't win. And so, depending, you know, no matter what one's perspective is, there's always going to be some cases where you believe that the interests of a small group will outweigh the interests of the majority, whether it's with regard to speech or religion, the right to keep and bear arms, etc. You know, the whole point of a written constitution is to, at least in some cases, protect the minority at the expense of the majority to avoid what the founders called a tyranny of the majority. The whole fight, Tony, as you know, is just over which cases those are, because I think, you know, no two people will necessarily agree.
All right, Stephen, fascinating information. Thanks so much, sir.
Happy to join you,
Tony. All right, Stephen Vladek is a professor of law and associate dean for scholarship at the American University's Washington College of Law. You're listening to the Tony Connolly Morning Show and more compelling talk radio.